Hello and welcome to the FV English podcast, your one-stop shop for Venezuelan football in English, bringing you fortnightly episodes dedicated to the Venezuelan league, the national teams, and the myriad of Venezuelan players around the world.
Welcome to the final episode of the year for the FV English podcast. Today we will be reviewing everything that's happened in Liga FV 2022, the men's and women's national teams, their highlights and lowlights, and noteworthy discussion from around the world involving our Venezuelan football stars. Joining me today is my regular co-host, Dominic Bisogno, and rejoining us after a fairly absent year, which is we're getting to later, traveling Europe, new jobs, new projects, is Kevin Vivas. Hello, Dominic, how are you?
I'm great. Looking forward to talking about a very eventful year. And looking forward to being back on the podcast.
And Kevin, welcome back to the FV English podcast. How are you?
Yes, very good, Jordan. Well, I'm happy to talk about Venezuelan football after 1 year of international football with the World Cup.
And if we get time in this podcast, we will also be going through Kevin's experiences traveling Europe in a football sense, from stadiums to matches, and of course, something that interests us a lot here at the FV English podcast, football culture. But before we get into that, let's start with a recap of Liga FV 2022. A couple of weeks ago, the end of season award ceremony hosted by El Mundo Es Un Balón, a radio station and social media account out here, was hosted, and the night was dominated by league champions Metropolitanos. But briefly before we get into that, somebody present and an award winner in his own right is currently representing Venezuela at the World Cup, Jesus Valenzuela. Kevin, what does it mean to Venezuela to have, and Venezuelan football world, to have a representative at the World Cup?
Well, as we have never been to a World Cup, and Venezuelans follow a lot, I would say, the World Cup, mainly the countries like Argentina, Brazil, Spain, Portugal, not Italy at the moment, but generally. And having a Venezuelan for first time in 40 years or something like that, or 50 years in a World Cup, is something that gets us off pride, because the most of people that love football, like, they weren't alive when it happened back in, I think, in 82, the Venezuelan referee. So Valenzuela was in charge of important match like France, Poland, and England, USA, and now he will be the fourth referee of this semifinal between France and Morocco. So it's something very good, and it's like seeing a part of Venezuela in the World Cup.
And as I said, he was at the award ceremony. He won Venezuelan Referee of the Year. Prior to the World Cup, what were the highlights of Jesus Valenzuela's career? Because he's had a fairly rapid rise to the World Cup over the past couple of seasons.
Yes, he has grown up so much in the last 2 years, I would say. His most important match before the World Cup, it was the final of Copa Sudamericana between Defensa y Justicia and Lanús. Defensa y Justicia was playing Enzo Fernández, which is now in the squad of Argentina. And also he was the referee of Argentina against Colombia in the Copa America semifinal. So yes, he was expected to join the World Cup list of referees, because he was very in a good esteem for CONMEBOL referees.
And as I said, the award ceremony a couple of weeks ago was dominated by Metropolitanos. They became league champions for the first time in their history, and also in their anniversary year, their 10th year as a Venezuelan football club. And Dominic, if you remember, around 8 months ago when we did the Liga FV preview podcast, I was saying Metropolitanos were going to finish mid to lower mid table. I had them in the 9th to 12th bracket. And instead, they have won the league. So exactly how did Jose Maria Mor prove me so drastically wrong?
Yes, and I think Metropolitanos proved a lot of people wrong. I certainly did not predict them to win the league either. I think really what proved to be the key for the squad, both in terms of the coach and the players, was just sort of the magic of consistency. You have a team that sort of makes the most of a lot of the hallmarks of Liga FV. You got a lot of young talent, a lot of veteran talent. You got everyone from Andres Ferro to Charlie Ortiz on this team pulling together. And Jose Maria Mor, who of course has been with this club for so long, really seemed to just be able to find a patience and a consistency with this squad. when a lot of the other contenders would have sort of volatile high points and low points through the season, say a Zamora or a Carabobo or a Tátira for that matter. Metropolitanos just always was there. They were always doing their average, their minimum, and often more. But they were always, when they weren't firing, it was small wins and draws. They were always finding their way to the points, even if it wasn't as flashy as some of the weeks some of the other teams were having. So again, that consistency, that team effort, just all coming together. You don't have the top goal scorer in the league, but you just have a lot of players that are going to show up and fight for a clean sheet, fight for a goal. It really pushed them to the end, and it literally pushed them back other teams that people assumed would beat them to the final, which was very impressive.
Yeah, and if I remember correctly, in that championship phase, so just to recap for people unfamiliar with the league or didn't follow it too closely, at the end of the regular stage of the season, so after 30 games, when everyone had played everyone twice, the top four broke away for the championship round to decide the title, where everyone played each other again twice. And so another six games. And then at the end of that, the two top teams played off in a one-game final. For that championship round, that six-game championship round, which was, you know, the best four teams of the season facing off in what should be the best games of the season. If I remember correctly, Metropolitanos actually finished bottom of that top four based on expected goals and expected points, suggesting that their, you know, performances weren't matching the results. And that alludes to what you say about digging in, winning a game even if you're not the better team, turning losses into draws, draws into victories. And I think you raised a really good point with the consistency. I remember on the day of the final, looking into the data and tweeting that Johnny Ferreira, the Monagas manager, Metro's opponents in the final, and Jose Maria Moore himself, were respectively second and third in the longest serving managers in Liga Football at one club. Top was Daniel Farias, who has since departed La Guaira and has been appointed head coach of Boston River in Uruguay. Jose Maria Moore was second with just shy of 1,400 days in charge. So he's now the longest serving coach in Liga Football by over a year, and Johnny Ferreira with just over 1,000 days in charge. Kevin, you have obviously followed Liga Football very intensely all your life. You have seen how Metropolitanos have grown up, not just since they were founded 10 years ago, but since Jose Maria Moore took charge. On and off the pitch, how have Metropolitanos gone about building an identity around the club to lead to this, you know, the greatest success there is in Venezuelan football?
Well, first of all, I feel that something, the Metropolitanos culture is something that we lack on football. For example, if you support Southampton, it's because it's not only your city, it has their own aspect of history, the players, whatever, the colors, etc. So I feel that something that happens so much in football is like you support a team, and then the next year you have a completely different squad than the prior year, and also players going to their rival teams. And so you imagine if Barcelona would have Xavi, Iniesta, and whatever, Thiago Alcantara, and then they go to Real Madrid. That's something that happens so much in Venezuela with Caracas and Táchira, Estudiantes de Mérida. And I feel that the players are part of the history of a team. And Metropolitanos makes the opposite to all the teams. They have contracts of longer years than the other team, like 3 years, 4 years, something like that. Jose Maria Mora is there since 2017. And I feel the respect, the friendship that players could have make an extra to play better football. For example, you see that in Argentina, in this World Cup, the support, the chemistry of the players. And it's something that Metropolitanos really have, just 3 or 4 signings for each season. And even one of the signings played before in Metropolitanos, like Walter Araujo. And well, that's something that we really lack, and it was a good example for Venezuelan football that we need to build up in all our teams.
And at the other end of the table, Aragua were relegated. There was only one team relegated from Liga Football this season, and again, it was an anniversary year for them. Metropolitanos win the title in their 10th anniversary, and Aragua get relegated in their 20th year anniversary. It followed an 18-year spell in the top flight, that included a certain Salomon Rondon, where he began his professional career and won the Copa Venezuela with them in 2007. But there were other narratives to the league. A few that stood out to me when I was recapping prior to this podcast was Zamora surprisingly crashing and burning at the very last. They looked destined to be in the final with Metropolitanos and then ultimately lost on the final day of the season. It was their first loss in like 16 games. And it's the one that meant that they didn't qualify for the final. Carabobo, Dominic, you and I both thought big things for them this season. They just scraped into the top four in the end, but were really running on empty by that stage of the season after a few managerial changes and a heavy reliance on Kevin Viveros for the goals. Finished top goal scorer in his first season in the league. The second foreigner to do so in consecutive seasons after Samson Akinyula last year. And for me, Fran Perlo and Zulia. Zulia barely picked up points before he arrived, were the third best team or fourth best team in the league by points won per game during his spell. And then again, after he left with six or so games left of the season, they tailed back off and failed to pick up a victory. Dominic, for you, aside from champions and teams sadly relegated, what did you find most interesting about the season? What would you pick out as a narrative to remember?
I guess I'm going to pick two. I'm going to break the rules and pick two. But I think one, briefly on the note of relegation, I thought Useve's survival campaign was a very interesting run to watch. You know, we're unfortunately talking about a league that the last couple seasons, it's often been pretty clear who's getting relegated pretty early. And this season, that simply was not the case, really, up until the second to last week, maybe. That was really interesting to watch, very different from what we saw last year, for example. Other than that, the Zamora drop-off was very interesting. But actually, I do want to talk about Zulia, so we'll talk about Zulia instead. I think the Fran Perlo period at Zulia and then the dismissal, it's funny because it's almost the exact opposite of what we were just talking about with Metropolitanos. It's a coach coming in very, very briefly and not being allowed pertinence, not being allowed time to make the most of what he's got. So it was so interesting to see a team turn around so quickly and then turn around again so quickly after he was dismissed, or after he left, rather. And you saw the team in the end, you know, go from potentially competing for the Sudamericana to not being that far off from the relegation drop. It's a really unfortunate dismissal for me, or a departure for me, only because he clearly had so much potential. And this is, by the way, a manager that was supposed to be managing Academia Puerto Cabello, that obviously was short-lived. But so it leaves his ability to manage in Liga Footvay sort of an interesting question mark, because he clearly can get the job done. But again, he's gone. And you have a team in Zulia that probably need that leadership but aren't going to have it going forward. So, that was a fascinating. I actually wrote an article about it for World Football Index in the midst of him being there, about the turnaround and about the players that turned around with him. A lot of young talent that really stepped up under him. And it was really unfortunate to see him go.
Yeah, and we have breaking pre-news, the extra official, as they say on Venezuelan football Twitter, rumours of Zulia FC merging / almost subject of a hostile takeover from Deportivo Rio Zuliano, the second team in Zulia State, who narrowly missed out on chances to fight for promotion from the second division last season. That looks set to happen, but isn't quite yet news. Before we move on from Liga Footvay and onto the national team side, Kevin, I just wanted to ask you, over the past couple of seasons, we've seen the format of Liga Footvay change on a seasonal basis, pretty much. We've had 3 years in three different formats. And from what I understand, it's set to be the same format as this season, next season. So it'll be the first time since 2020, 2019, almost, that we've had the same format for two consecutive seasons. Quique García, the new head coach of Deportivo La Guaira, has said that he's not a fan of these kind of formats. He would like a format like we see in the Premier League, like we see in La Liga. Everyone plays each other twice, and whoever's top at the end of that is the champion. And he illustrated it in a really interesting way and a really powerful argument that was so obvious that I hadn't noticed it. Deportivo La Guaira only missed out on the top four on goal difference. Had they finished in the top four at the end of regular season, they would be guaranteed Copa Libertadores football next season, be it from the group stages of them finishing top two or the qualifying rounds from finishing third or fourth. Instead, they missed out on the championship round. They went into the Sudamericana qualifying round within Venezuela and missed out on that. So Deportivo La Guaira went from, after 30 games, the end of the regular season, only missing out on Libertadores football and goal difference, to six games later, not playing in any continental football at all. As a South American, because we have formats like this all over the continent to varying aspects, and as a Venezuelan, are you a fan of the Apertura Clausura and or the Grand Final format, or would you like to see a more European format utilized?
I think that at the end, no one has the right choice to select the better format. Like, there is not the ideal format. And I think it's the thing of recon the pros and the cons. If you have a format like the European system, you may lose the factors of teams without any chance to qualify to Copa Sudamericana or Libertadores because they are far away in terms of points. So in our situation, we have to avoid that because teams cannot pay the players, because players can avoid even the terms of bets, etc. We have many dangerous things to avoid with this European format as well. The appealing of the league, that if your team is in the fifth place or in the sixth place and in the last three games, you don't have any opportunity. So no people is attending to the stadium. Instead, with this new format, you have chance of even being champion when you are sixth, if you win a match and then you get into the first four places. And so it's a thing of pros and cons. Of course, with an European system, you award the regularity, but it's something that also brings another problem. So in my case, I would support this format. The thing I really don't like so much is the spots or the stages to give the Sudamericana qualification, but I also understand that it helps the teams when they are in the 15th, 14th place to have something to fight. And what I would do is just reducing the amount of teams in first division.
Yeah, and I've heard a few people say that. I've even seen rumours that it's going to be a 12-team league next season. And I'd like to think that if that decision's been made, it's already been made because, you know, we're mid-December and the season is scheduled to start on the 9th of February, according to other information I've heard. So hopefully that decision has already been made. But I do know that a couple of head coaches share that opinion, that it should be a 12-team league, which I think is what they have in Paraguay. And others that want a 20-team league and think that, and I guess this is reflective of Venezuela, that think that regional government, you know, state government should step up and be funding teams to make sure that they can, you know, financially survive a 20-team season. We're going to move away from Liga Football 2022, the domestic season now, to recap the national teams, both male and female. And I will chuck this up in the air for both of you, from the men's side or the women's side, to pick your highlight of 2022. And I'll go to Dominic first.
Oh, wow, my highlight. I guess I'll go with the men. As you're well aware, you were sort of at the head of covering it for us. But the Toulon tournament was such a fantastic ride, I think, for everybody involved. With the Venezuelan national team. And we saw so many young players that a lot of which still play in Liga Footvey that we've been hyping up in various ways for some of them for years. And we saw them compete with some of the best countries in the world, you know, only really falling in the end to France.
Obviously gone down to 10 men as well.
Yeah, and right. And so to see, you know, first player that comes to mind is someone like Segovia. I know, I think you had highlighted at the time that we had an old tweet talking about how good he was. And obviously now he's moved to Italy. Seeing players like that, who at the time still played in Liga Footvay, play at such a high level, again, against, you know, the Colombias and Mexicos and Frances of the world, what was just so, you know, it reminded me of the, how great it was to watch the U7 or the U20 World Cup run in 2017. It reminded me of that sort of pride in seeing these young guys, a lot of which didn't on paper have a great chance, seeing them make this great run. It was really inspiring. It's great to see some of those guys have gotten moves, some of them not yet, but hopefully they get the moves they deserve. But yeah, I mean, there was just so much. Obviously, in the end, Venezuela don't win, but other than that one detail, it was really a phenomenal campaign to follow, and I think everybody really enjoyed seeing it.
Yeah, and you highlighted Segovia, who was named player of the tournament, was in the team of the tournament, and Andres Ferro and Yerson Chacon, two bright young talents that remain in Liga Footvay for now, also highlighted for other individual awards at the tournament. Kevin, what was your highlight on the national team front this year, men's or women's?
Well, it was Beckerman selected this year, right? Or the last year. I think, otherwise, I feel that would be the highlight, because it gave us a hope for the national team to qualify on the next World Cup. But the rest, he didn't perform well. The team didn't perform very well in general, neither in the friendlies nor the qualification match, instead of the Bolivia's game, that it was like a boom. Like our first match with him, and we won 4-1 against Bolivia of Cesar Farias, that they were doing well. And we have the afraid of Cesar Farias, Venezuela's beat us with Bolivia. And I'm hopeful with Beckerman, but he hasn't showed a good game with Venezuela in friendlies. But I'm hopeful because he has experience, and I trust he could do it well. And as a highlight, the female football, female national team didn't do well as neither in the qualification. Well, the Maurice Ravelo tournament was, of course, an illusional thing for us. And well, shamefully, we didn't win champion, but we weren't expected to be on the final.
Yeah, and to touch upon what you said about the men's national team, that Bolivia game, Peckerman's first game in charge, happened way back in January. So it was this year, a 4-1 victory. And then Venezuela's World Cup qualification campaign, although already dead at this point, trickled out with away defeats to Uruguay and Argentina and a home defeat to Colombia. But the second half of the year, the friendlies, although you very correctly said Venezuela wasn't playing the best football, Venezuela did secure 4 out of 6 victories, beating Malta and Saudi Arabia 1-0, the UAE 4-0, and Syria 2-1. Obviously not the most illustrious of opponents, but then the other two results were a 1-0 defeat to Iceland in quite possibly the most boring game of football I've ever seen. Iceland winning 1-0 thanks to a penalty, and a 2-2 draw with Panama, which I think, had it not been a friendly, would have had us on the edge of our seats for the final 10 minutes, because Venezuela did rescue a draw when it looked like we were going to be beaten by a Panamanian team who had 4 or 5 players that play their football in Venezuela in Liga Footvay. And those final two games, the Panama draw and the Syria victory, was noteworthy for the debut and first two goals for Ernesto Torregrossa, an Italian-born 30-year-old who, whilst I think isn't someone we should be getting excited about, does show that the Federation is widening its net when it comes to national team call-ups. Finally, on the national team roundup, the under-20 women's team won gold at the South American Games this year. Kimberlyn Campos shined in that tournament, had already secured a move to Real Oviedo of Spain, but certainly cemented her status as an exciting young talent with that move. And lastly, our third topic, and if we have time to squeeze in Kevin's trips around Europe, we will. But onto our last topic, notable news from around the world in terms of Venezuelan football. We alluded to Telasco Segovia's move to Italy. He went to Sampdoria, in the mid-year. It's probably the highest transfer fee received in Venezuelan football for the past 10 years. There will be debate over whether it's the highest fee, just because these things aren't always crystal clear. But he went to Sampdoria for around $2 million. John Aramburu, another player from the Toulon tournament, went to Real Unión de Irán in the Tercera division of Spain. That is a more exciting move than it perhaps looks on paper. Aramburu is of Basque background. The club is in the Basque country of Spain and right on the doorstep of Athletic Club Bilbao and Real Zaragoza. Sociedad, Real Sociedad. My apologies to anyone who has strong views on Spain and Basque politics. I sincerely apologize. And mid-year, Samson Akinyula also made a move, joining Zamalek of Egypt for a fee reported to be over $1 million. He was the top scorer of Liga Footbay in 2021, was fizzling out in 2022, to be perfectly honest, but I think that was more out of frustration that he didn't move at the beginning of the year. Many people in Venezuelan football, particularly Caracas fans, will probably follow his career avidly now and wish him the best. He also became the first player to be called up for a national team outside of South America whilst playing for Caracas in some time. I think the last one was, again, possibly African at the beginning of the 90s. Moving on to the end of the season, Juan Camilo Zapata and Kevin Kelsey have both moved on. Juan Camilo Zapata, a Colombian that has set the league on fire for the past two seasons, having come up from the second division with the Manos Colmenares. Kevin, I think that's a good place to bring you in, because you made a really good post on SoFootball's Instagram, sort of detailing what Zapata has done for Venezuelan football and why, even though he's not a Venezuelan, this is a move that the league can be proud of.
Yes, and it's also that we have to say a lot, because for many foreigners coming to Venezuela to play, it's a big opportunity to find a stage to them. Juan Camilo Zapata was playing in second division in Colombia, which is not a good stage for a Colombian. And then he got injured, and then he was playing amateur, and then he tried on second division in Venezuela. He grew up, and then he was one of the best players of the season in this year. And many, many foreigner players have found in Venezuela a very good step in their career, in Panama as well. For example, Gabriel Torres, now he's playing in USA or something like that, but he was selected to the Panama squad for the World Cup in 2018. Freddy Gondola make a step ahead coming to Yaracuyanos and then into Deportivo Táchira. And now he's a normal player of the Panama national team. So it's a good team to speak about that our league can work for foreigners, because we also have the opportunity to show them in Copa Libertadores or Sudamericanas, which is better than second division in Colombia, third division in Argentina, and better than first division or CONCACAF leagues.
Yeah, and another thing about, I think, what the romance of the Zapata story that perhaps the Samson Akinyula story lacks, even though, and this is probably part of it, even though Caracas is a bigger club and Akinyula went for a bigger fee, although Zapata's fee has been reported as a club record fee for Cape Town City in South Africa, is that Zapata was at an unfashionable club. He did these things at a club that doesn't have much of a fan base. Is that fair to say, Kevin?
Yes, for sure. It's the second team of a city, which being a second team in a city here in Venezuela is not having fans or very, very few.
And away from transfers, when it comes to Venex news, is the individual performances of a few individual players. And I think Dominic, being our resident MLS expert, Brujo Martinez seems to succeed year after year in different ways with Philadelphia Union, this year reaching the MLS Cup final.
Yeah, absolutely. Continues to have a really phenomenal career with the Union. A team that, frankly, was expected to get to this point a couple of years ago, actually basically his first year with the team, and has gotten a little unlucky in the playoff structure, basically, the MLS has. And so they've fallen short. Last year, they actually made the conference final, which if you win, you go to MLS Cup, and about half their squad got COVID and they lost to New York City in that. So this has been coming for a while. Obviously, unfortunately, they do fall short in the final. They end up losing to LAFC, but a great run from Brujo Martinez, who continues to basically just assert himself as one of the favorite midfielders in the league. Many people who aren't us think he's the best midfielder in MLS, certainly defensive midfielder. So he continues to sort of pave a path in a very useful way, in my opinion, because I think, you know, because of Joseph Martinez, the profile of the Venezuelan forward really blossomed in MLS. But when you actually looked at the players that move there and do the best, it's actually usually midfielders and defensive players. So I think it's great that Brujo Martinez is sort of making sure that at the highest levels in MLS, people remember that that's a position to look for Venezuelan talent. But no, yeah, a great year for him, and congratulations on a great run.
Yeah, you're right. Aside from us, there are many people that see Brujo Martinez as like the blueprint for what you want of a player in his position in MLS. I've seen clubs transfer strategies for upcoming windows have it written, we want a Brujo Martinez. But I think it's fair to say, although a few players and his teammate being probably the best example, Jesus Bueno, although a few central midfielders or defensive midfielders have gone to MLS since Brujo Martinez, I think it's fair to say an MLS club hasn't found the next Brujo Martinez from Liga Footbay yet, despite, I think, one or two candidates existing in Liga Footbay. Another thing about Brujo is he didn't go to MLS as a young player. He was already 25 when he went. He played in the second division in Venezuela just a couple of years previous. And I think maybe last year after the Copa America, Edson Castillo could have had that opportunity to go to MLS. Although a year or two older than Brujo, you know, he wasn't old 12 months ago, 18 months ago. He's not old now, but, you know, he was 26, 27 then. Perhaps that was a moment for Edson Castillo. But after Liga Footbay 22, the 2022 season is over, can you see any, I'm not asking you to make a prediction, but can you see any performers from Liga Footbay 2022? This is a question for Kevin and Dominic, who you think could step up and make an immediate impact in the same way that Brujo did?
Well, the first
doesn't have to be a midfielder like Brujo, just a crosser. Sure.
I guess I'll throw out there the first person that comes to mind for me, not exactly the same position, although potentially able to play a similar position, is actually a Mickey Romero, who was linked through the year to multiple MLS teams. He is younger than Brujo Martinez certainly was when he left, but you know, I think that's a player that's still in Liga Footbay that probably shouldn't be, and so it'd be interesting to see where he moves, and I know that MLS teams looked into that, so that'd be interesting to see if that move happens, that he might be carried off somewhere else. But I certainly think that's a player that some MLS teams have considered as a potential midfield option.
And Kevin, do you see any player in Liga Footbay right now that could make an immediate impact in MLS?
Well, immediate, I don't have any on mind at the moment. I feel it would be an important step for La Rotonda to make. He has curriculum and he has played with the national team. And for him and for Venezuela, it would be good. He gets other rhythm in MLS.
Yeah, no, that's fair to say. And I think I would be, to make an immediate impact, I think I'd be hard pushed to. I certainly think there's talent in Liga Footbay, of course, that can go to MLS and do well. But Brujo making such an immediate impact direct from Venezuela, I think is unparalleled in recent years. Christian Caceres Jr. had 12 to 18 months, you know, being bedded in between New York Rebels 2 and the first team. And now, again, he's a standout midfield player. He's probably going to be the first Venezuelan in recent history to jump from Venezuela to MLS to Europe. We've spoken before, Kevin, that MLS hasn't really shown itself as a trampoline, if you like, for a South American talent. Miguel Almirón is obviously the exception, but he sort of stands alone as a South American that's gone from South America to MLS into Europe and had success. We've actually just seen the other way around. Portland Timbers signing Evander for $10 million from Norway, I believe. So that'll be interesting to see how he does. We are running out of time, so Kevin's football experiences in Europe, it will be the first podcast of 2023. But before we clock out for the year, I would like to raise on the Venex topic that Dana Castellanos this year continued to raise the profile of Venezuelan women's football with a headline move from Atletico Madrid to Manchester City. none other than Manchester City, in fact. And she's already amongst the goals. She's already in the starting lineups. And importantly, for the visibility of not just women's football, but Venezuelan football, she's fronting publicity campaigns, not just for Venezuela, but for Manchester City, one of the fastest growing brands in women's football. And it's great for Venezuelan football to see. It's great for us as Football English trying to platform Venezuelan football. She really is, I think, an unparalleled role model when it comes to Venezuelan football. Dominic and Kevin, thank you for being by my side throughout the year. I think it's fair to say another successful year for Football English. And I hope both of you will be back early in January to listen to Kevin and his tour around Europe. Until then, bye-bye.